5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
No, you would push me into the fucking grave. Like, and you'd be like, right, no, take her.
This podcast contains graphic descriptions that some listeners may find disturbing. Listener discretion is advised. Now, with that being said, welcome to the Mortal Musings podcast.
Right, let's do this.
So I've got one for you. This is a two types of people situation.
Okay.
We've got people like myself and people like you. Yeah. When I eat crisps, I have two fingers. My thumb and my index. They're the dirty crisp
fingers. But that's where you're going wrong. Because if you use more, you can handle more at a time.
I eat one at a time, though.
Oh, no.
Neil, like, digs his hand into the whole packet. And then his whole hand is just covered in filth.
Well, actually, I have two different ways. I either use my whole hand or no hands. I just tip. I'll keep tipping the packet into my face.
It actually bothers me because if you touch me with your dirty hand, like if you put your hand on my arm or something, I will freak the fuck out. Get your filthy fucking mitts away from me.
Yeah, I remember your brother. He made the mistake of telling me, but one of his, like, I think he said phobias. Like, it was severe. He went, if someone's got like crisp dust.
Yeah, on the back of their hand and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, so, I hate that.
So I kept sending him photos of me with crisp dust up the back of my hand. And then I sent him a voice note with the photo. And I was like,
do you see cheese dust on me hands?
No, but like I'm the same. I can't deal with that. I think anyone listening to this who has kids, it's going to trigger them with the idea of their child running up them for a cuddle with these dirty mitts on them.
Snot bubble hanging out of the nose.
No, I can't. I can't deal with it. Why do you do that? Have you always done that?
And I don't do that with a snot bubble.
No, with the dirty hands. And does it not bother you that your hands are just greasy?
No, because it's extra seasoning at the end. You lick your fingers. So say if you're eating something like Watsits.
The dirtiest of dirty crisps.
Or cheesy Doritos.
Yeah.
My fingertips will be orange.
Okay, but like with something
and
like...
And you can lick and suck them clean.
So something like Doritos or Watsits really bother me because they actually cake your fingers.
Yeah.
And shit.
Yeah.
I can't deal with that. So, like, if I'm out in public and I've had food, I'm like, I need to find a bathroom. I need to wash my hands. I can't do this. Like, I like to have hand sanitizer or wipes or something in my bag.
Well, here's my logic. You can do that. Or you can just cop on, use your whole hand. Yeah. Lick and suck your fingers clean and then dry them on your trousers.
Like, you know, trousers for anyone who can't understand what the
because
fuck is
Because you're washing
on
your clothes anyway.
But the grease gets into the fabric.
What?
The grease gets into the fabric.
Yeah, but you're washing them.
No, but it's still in the fabric. So it can damage the fibres of your clothes.
Huh.
So where we're at here, lads, is I don't like having dirty hands and Neil's a filthy fucker.
Allegedly.
Not allegedly.
That's your opinion.
It's not my... You've just admitted to it. It's recorded.
Look, I feel like each episode I'm just getting attacked more and more.
Feel free to attack me on anything I do.
We haven't got the time.
Yeah. Do you know what that means? He's giving himself some time for the next episode. He's going to think, he's going to make a whole list of shit that I do.
Hello, everyone. This is Robin Warder, host of the true crime podcast, The Trail Went Cold. If you grew up watching the classic television show Unsolved Mysteries, then this is the podcast for you. Each week, I profile a new unsolved murder or missing persons case and share all the baffling details. Afterward, I provide my own personal analysis and theories about what might have happened. This is a show for true crime buffs who are fascinated by cold cases and love to discuss them and pick them apart in an attempt to figure out the truth. So be sure to check out our podcast to learn about some truly bizarre unsolved mysteries where the trail went cold.
So, what's today's episode?
John List. We are going to be covering John List today.
I don't know him.
Yeah, you're looking at me very blank. I promise you, as we go through it, something will click. You'll remember something about this.
Okay.
You don't look confident.
No.
I promise you will.
Like, the name don't ring a bell at all.
It's a fairly well-known case.
And it sounds like a name I'd remember. List.
If we get to the end of this, and you still don't remember who this is,
you're going to shoot me.
What? I'll show you a picture of him, and I guarantee you'll recognise him.
Okay.
Actually, I don't want to say I'll guarantee, because Neil's memory is shocking, but I'm fairly confident that you will remember who he is. John Emil List was born on the 17th of September, 1925.
Oh, I remember him.
To German-American parents, Franklin and Alma List. John grew up in Michigan, and his parents were said to have been very strict, and that their devotion to Lutheranism took centre stage.
Is what?
Lutheranism, their religion.
Okay. What religion is that?
Christianity.
Why don't you say Christianity then?
He would carry that into his adult life. His faith was incredibly important to him, and he would also go on to become a Sunday school teacher in his church. He was an only child, and his mother was described as an overly protective, domineering mother. In 1943, John graduated from Bay City Central High School, and pretty much immediately he enrolled in the army. During his time spent in service, John worked as a laboratory technician before being discharged in 1946. Once he was discharged from the army, John attended the University of Michigan, where he would obtain a master's degree in accounting. But as a result of the Korean War, John was recalled to active duty in November of 1950. While stationed in Virginia, John met a woman named Helen Morris Taylor. Helen had recently become widowed when her first husband Marvin was killed in action. Together, Helen and Marvin had one child, a daughter named Brenda.
Wait, what nationality was she?
American.
Oh, okay. Well,
why'd you ask that?
No, so like, oh, so she's got with the enemy. I didn't know if it
was. No, he was stationed in Virginia.
Yeah.
He wasn't in Korea.
Oh. And there's not many Koreans called Helen.
I don't know. There could be. On the 1st of December, 1951, John and Helen married in Baltimore. They work fast, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
So the family would move around a bit, mainly due to John's ever-changing job roles. They would eventually settle in Kalamazoo, where John and Helen welcomed their three children. Patricia.
Kalamawa?
Kalamazoo.
What's that?
It's a place in Michigan.
Kalamazoo?
Yeah, Kalamazoo.
Okay.
Do you like that? You enjoying that name? So, like I said, they welcomed three children while there. Patricia, John Jr. and Freddie, who were all described as active and popular children. By the way, I don't know if you picked up on it. So, John, who we're talking about, the father.
Yeah.
His father is named Frederick.
Yeah.
His youngest son is Frederick. Yeah. And then the other son, John Jr., is John Frederick. So they're keeping those names in the family, aren't they? It's getting a bit much, really.
Just to think outside the box a bit more.
In 1960, John got a job with Xerox in New York and moved his family out to Rochester. By 1965, John got a new job and the family were packing up again, but this time they moved to New Jersey.
Fucking Richard Speck all over again.
I knew you'd say that.
John's new position was that of the vice president in a bank. So, not a bad job. And with all that extra income, John thought, you know what? Treat yourself. The family, including John's mother Alma, moved into a large house in a well-to-do area of Westfield, New Jersey. And when I say large house, Neil, I'm talking about a 19-room Victorian mansion.
Where the fuck have they got the money for that?
He's got a good job now. Vice president of a bank. Not too shabby, is it?
That'd get you a one-bedroom flat here now.
Like, I'm not joking. Like, this house was stunning. It had stained glass windows, marble fireplaces. It had a ballroom, Neil. Do you want me to translate that for the Brits?
Yeah.
Ballroom. Yeah? They do good. Is that how you'd say it? That's a niche joke. If anyone gets it, it's from Will and Grace, but...
Oh, is it?
Mm.
Oh, I thought it was from Friends.
When does that say in Friends?
You won from American Pie when she was in
it. Oh, yeah. Never had any professional dance training. I fucking love her. So, yeah, nice gaff they've got. Plenty of space. There was enough space that the entire third floor was pretty much just an apartment for John's mother. But, you know, when I heard that, I kind of felt a bit bad for her because Alma at this stage is in her 80s and she's having to hike up all them stairs to get to her gaff. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Tight bastard.
Well, that's where you want to get a Thora Heard in.
Get a what?
A Thora Heard.
Thora Heard.
Yeah. See, Brits, I'll get that reference.
Thora Heard. What?
A Thora Heard.
Can you just explain it rather than saying it again? Because I'm not getting it.
A stairlift. A Thora Heard stairlift.
Moving swiftly on. In December of 1971, the family were thought to have been away from home visiting a relative who had been unwell. But after a month went by and they still weren't back, no phone calls to say that they had extended their trip, neighbours were starting to get a bit sus. They noticed that the lights in the house were starting to burn out. So how long have the f***ing lights been on at that stage? You know what I mean?
Burning out? Like candles?
No, lights in the house are burning out. The bulb is burning out.
Oh, it's blood.
It's burnt out, like it's gone.
No.
You know when you've had a light for a few years and it goes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't burn out, it blows. The bulb's blown.
Okay, the bulb was blown. So with the lights burnt out, blown out, what else? Anything else you want to add to it?
Depends if fuse is gone or not.
With the possibility of a fuse going in the house, the police were called. When the police arrive, there's no answer, but they are able to gain entry through a window that had been left unlocked. As the police enter the home, they notice how cold it was. It was obvious that no one had been in there for quite some time, but they did hear music playing. Detective Bernard Tracy described the music as a funeral type of music, and that it was very disturbing to the officers at the scene.
Must have been.
It must have been really fucking eerie.
So it's dark, cold.
Mm-hmm. And you've just got this, like, I assume, organ music or something playing. No good. Now, as they look around the house, they start to get a bit of a smell.
Okay.
Yeah. It's the smell of decomposition. And as officers make their way through the home and into the ballroom, they find four bodies laid on the floor. 47-year-old Helen, 16-year-old Patricia, 15-year-old John, and 13-year-old Freddie, each laying on a sleeping bag that was soaked in blood. The kids had been lined up neatly, one next to the other, and their mother was laid lengthways in front of the kids. All had been shot at close range.
Where's John?
Well, this is it. As police further search through the house, they find a trail of blood on the floor, leading from the kitchen through the hall into the ballroom. In the kitchen, they find bags full of bloodied paper towels and a mop also covered in blood. Which it does seem a bit weird that the killer would clean up after the murders except for the drag marks.
Yeah.
But I'll explain later. Making their way up to the third floor, they found the body of 84-year-old Alma.
Oh yeah, I forgot to ask about her.
Well, also, they did have a... John had a stepdaughter, remember Brenda?
Yeah.
From Helen's first marriage, but she had since been married and moved out of the family home.
Luckily, by the sounds of it.
Luckily, yeah. Two guns were found in John's desk. A 9mm semi-automatic handgun and a .22 caliber revolver, which would later be determined to be the guns that had been used to commit the murders. A letter was also found addressed to the pastor of the church that the Liss family attended. So you're ready to hear the letter that was left.
Okay.
Dear Pastor, I am sorry to add this additional burden to your work. I know that what has been done is wrong from all that I have been taught, and that any reason that I might give will not make it right. But you are the only person that I know that, while not condoning this, will at least possibly understand why I felt that I had to do this.
Wait, so he's apologising for giving someone work to do with, like, the funeral?
Yeah, basically for confessing this to you and having to deal with it all.
It's a bit weird.
Number one, I wasn't earning anywhere near enough to support us. Everything I tried seemed to fall to pieces. True, we could have gone bankrupt and maybe gone on welfare. Number two. But that brings me to my next point. Knowing the type of location that one would have to live in, plus the environment for the children, plus the effect on them knowing they were on welfare, was just more than I thought they could and should endure. I know they were willing to cut back, but this involved a lot more than that. Number three. With Pat being so determined to get into acting, I was fearful as to what that might do to her continuing to be a Christian. I'm sure it wouldn't have helped.
That's something that I've never understood. Why in, like, religious communities is being an actress or a singer, they see it as sinful. They're like, they're going to sin.
Yeah,
they're going to do drugs. They're going to...
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I don't know if it's the whole Hollywood thing of it, or is it if you were on screen and had to kiss someone or do a sex scene that you're not in, or is it that side of it? I don't know.
Oh, okay.
Number four. Also, with Helen not wanting to go to church, I knew that this would harm the children eventually in their attendance. I had continued to hope that she would begin to come to church soon. But when I mentioned it to her, she just blew up and said she wanted her name taken off the church rolls. Again, this could only have been an adverse result for the children's continued attendance. So that is the sum of it. If any one of these has been the condition, we might have pulled through. But this was just too much. At least I'm certain that we have all gone to heaven now. If things had gone on, who knows if this would have been the case. Of course, Mother got involved because doing what I did to my family would have been a tremendous shock to her at her age.
So her age got to do with it?
He thinks, you know, her the discovery of what he had done.
Yeah.
She wouldn't have been able to take it at her age.
Oh, okay. Sorry, one was getting confused.
Therefore, knowing that she is also a Christian, I felt it best that she be relieved of the troubles of this world that would have hit her. After it was all over, I said some prayers for them all, from the hymn book. That was the least I could do. Now for the final arrangements. Helen and the children have all agreed that they would prefer to be cremated. Please see...
Wait, and they're taking his word for it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, this is a letter. I don't know what the final result was.
Okay.
Please see to it that the costs are kept low. He then talks very matter-of-fact about arrangements and who to forward the information on to, and for the pastor to feel free to add any comments that he feels appropriate. Also, I don't know what will happen to the books and personal things, but to the extent possible, I'd like for them to be distributed as you see fit. Some books might go to the school or church library. Originally, I had planned for this on November 1st, All Saints' Day, but travel arrangements were delayed. I thought it would have been an appropriate day for them to get to heaven. As for me, please let me be dropped from the congregation rolls. I leave myself in the hands of God's justice and mercy. I don't doubt that he is able to help us, but apparently he saw fit not to answer my prayers the way that I hoped they would be answered.
This makes me think that perhaps it was for the best as far as the children's souls are concerned. I know that many will only look at the additional years that they could have lived. But if finally they were no longer Christians, what would have been gained? Also, I'm sure many will say, how could anyone do such a horrible thing? My only answer is it isn't easy and was only done after much thought.
He's an arrogant bastard, isn't he?
Yeah.
You can remove me from my role. If I were this pastor, I'd wipe my ass on this letter.
After that, he gives the details for Helen's sister to be reached. One other thing. It may seem cowardly to have always shot from behind, but I didn't want any of them to even know at the last second that I had done this to them. John got hurt more because he seemed to struggle longer. The rest were immediately out of pain. John didn't consciously feel anything either. Please remember me in your prayers. I will need them whether or not the government does its duty as it sees. I'm only concerned with making my peace with God. And of this, I am assured, because of Christ dying even for me. P.S. Mother's in the hallway in the attic, third floor. She was too heavy to move. Signed, John. Now,
so he's having a dig at his mother's weight?
Yeah. It's a cheeky bastard.
Yeah, arrogant bastard.
So, with that letter, police knew what the motive was and who the killer was.
I wouldn't really call it a motive. It's not justifiable, is it?
Well, absolutely not. Rarely is, though, is it?
No.
So, yeah, they know what the motive and who. But where the fuck is John Boy? Where's he gone? Remember that the neighbours, the kids' schools and everyone had been told that they were just going to visit a relative a month earlier. So he's got a right head start.
Fucking hell.
Yeah. The police begin their search, and 2 days after the bodies had been discovered, John's car was found abandoned at JFK Airport. The parking stub for his car was dated the 10th of November. They checked flight records, but there was no evidence that John had gotten on a flight.
Oh.
With police aware that they were already on the back foot, a nationwide warrant was issued for John. Every FBI office, every post office and authorities around the country were notified. And there were two theories that police were working with. The first was that, you know, he had gone somewhere else and died by suicide. The second was that he was living somewhere out in the Midwest, just fucked off.
Yeah.
Out of sight. And with pretty much nothing to go on, all they had was every once in a while, they would get a call of a possible sighting, but nothing ever panned out. It would be 18 years before there's a development in the case.
Fucking hell.
And I think that is where we are going to leave it for part one. Yes.
So it's another two-parter?
It is, I'm sorry.
Prick.
Well.
Can I just tell you what I think he's done?
Go on.
So he's trying to throw him off. So he's either got a fake ID and got on a plane, or he's trying to throw him off by parking at the airport so they think he's got on a plane and he's still local.
Yeah. You have to wait and see, don't you?
This is bollocks.
It is, isn't it?
But I only have to wait a little bit.
Yeah. Apart from the Timothy Treadwell one, I fucked you up with that.
Yeah, I know. So, we'll get a fucking audit done so I can get into part two. So what's the oddity?
We're going to be talking about a woman by the name of Marjorie McCall.
Okay.
Now, this oddity was suggested by one of our listeners, Chris. So thank you very much. And hope I do it justice. Now, apparently there's some debate over this story. There's a lot of different places all over Europe that claim this story or something similar to it.
Oh, so it's like a Jesus thing.
What?
So it's like a Jesus thing.
What do you mean a Jesus thing?
Well, not a Jesus thing, a God thing. Like everywhere sees it different.
I suppose, yeah. But it's kind of more people want the story as an attraction, I think.
Okay.
But according to historian Jim Conway, he believes, based on his research, that this story is true. So, going back a few years, in 1705, in County Armagh, a woman by the name of Marjorie McCall fell ill with a fever. And even though Marjorie is married to a doctor, John McCall, it is 1705, and you know, a fever...
Oh, they died from stubbing a toe back then.
You're done for.
Yeah.
It's over. Yeah. Lights out.
They put you down like an oss.
And unfortunately, that was the case. Marjorie passed away, leaving behind her husband and children. Now, at her wake, there was a bit of chatter about Marjorie's gold wedding ring. People were concerned about her being buried with it because, you know, grave-robbing bastards. They did attempt to remove the ring, but because her finger had swollen, they were unable to do so. So that was it. Marjorie was buried with her wedding ring still on her finger.
Could have cut a finger off.
Now, you know the Irish. A bunch of dirty gossips.
Yeah.
Exactly. Word got out about the jewellery and the fucking magpies were out. That evening, after Marjorie had been laid to rest, she was paid a visit by a few scoundrels. They digged through the dirt, opened her coffin, and tried to pry the ring from her finger. But the same as with her loved ones, they struggled to get the ring from her finger.
Yeah.
Now, grave robbers don't tend to be too compassionate about these sort of things, and neither does Neil, apparently. And they thought, hey, let's just cut her finger off.
Yeah.
Get it that way. So as they hold the blade against her skin and begin to cut, blood starts to trickle from her finger.
It would.
It shouldn't. She's dead.
Oh, yeah. She's not dead.
She's not dead. So, again, this story is from quite a few years ago. And some say that the men had fainted from the fright. Others say that they just fucking legged it. Just scattered.
Either one, yeah.
Yeah.
Could have been both.
Well, there's two of them.
Yeah.
But anyway...
If we was doing it and you fainted, I wouldn't be hanging about. Bye.
No, you would push me into the fucking grave. Like, you'd be like, right, no, take her. But anyway, Marjorie awakes from her ordeal and I'm sure is completely freaked out and disorientated and makes her way back home. Where else are you going to go?
No, she didn't.
According to the story. When she reaches her home, she knocks on the door and it was said that her husband John had said to the children, if your mother was still alive, I'd swear that was her knock. So John answers the door and nearly shits himself.
As he would.
In some tellings of the story, it's said that he dropped dead of fright, or others simply say that he fainted, which I mean, fair enough. Regardless of what the crack was there, somewhere down the line, it was said that Marjorie would go on to remarry and have several more children.
Bollocks. This can't be true.
And when Marjorie did finally die, for real this time, she was buried again in the Shankill graveyard. And her gravestone still stands today with the inscription, lived once, buried twice.
Shankill?
Yeah, up north.
Oh.
Obviously, there's some drama added into this story. But what do you reckon? A load of shite or some truth to it?
See, I would say load of shite, but how the Irish are, as soon as someone dies, it's like, right, getting buried.
Right, well, I mean, obviously...
Whereas if it was in the UK, there's like a 2-week fucking period.
Obviously, I think there's some embellishment. But grave robbers, especially around that time, very believable.
Yeah.
Sure, some of the most famous grave robbers ever are from Northern Ireland, Burke and Hare. Incredibly well known. Also, people did tend to get buried more quickly with illnesses of that nature for fear of it spreading. So that's also, okay, yeah.
Yeah.
And there are records of a marriage between a Marjorie and John McCall.
Oh.
So I think it could be true, but there's some obviously.
You think she got out of that coffin and walked home and knocked
on
the
door? No, that's what I'm saying. That might have been a bit, you know, for all we know, it could have been like at her wake, she sat up or something.
Yes.
You know, I definitely think there's embellishment.
But as soon as you said, got up and walked home, it's like, bollocks. I don't believe that.
Well, that's the story anyway. And the gravestone is there. You can go visit it. Lived once, buried twice.
Well, thanks, Chris. You've given me something to do now.
Some nightmare shit for you.
No, I gotta look into this.
Well, like I said, you can go up north and go visit the gravestone.
I'd rather not. Well, shit.
Does that grab you?
And it says what on her headstone? Lived once, buried twice.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, you know, I said at the start of it, there's a lot of people, a lot of different countries who want to claim this story. But according to a historian, he believes this one to be, I mean, you don't want to say true, somewhat true anyway.
Yeah.
There you go.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
But yeah, you were absolutely right as well. I would 100% have pushed you in and liked it.
Yeah, I'd be done for. You, if you get scared, that's it.
Yes.
Anyone and anything else goes out the window.
Yes.
You're running for your life.
Norman had been. I'd push him in.
How could you do that? Yeah, before we go, I forgot to ask you. Is any of this sounding familiar?
Not with one bit.
Nothing?
No, not one bit.
Okay. I'm fairly confident the next episode it's going to start coming back to you.
Well, I'm glad you have confidence. I don't.
I have faith in you, Neil. Thank you so much for listening. Find us on Patreon, TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram. If you have a case suggestion, or maybe even your own story, email us at mortalmusingspodcast@gmail.com.